Chapter 6. Zuko tries really, really hard to fall asleep in his bed. He does. He wraps himself up and lays very still and tries his best not to fidget or stare at the ceiling. Doesn't work, though. For all that Zuko is falling asleep in Piandao's kitchen and dozing off on the drive home, he's wide awake now. From somewhere in the house, the air conditioner kicks on with a whir. Cold air coming through the vents makes him shiver. Zuko's used to feeling uncomfortable. Being effectively homeless means boiling in the summertime, and in the winter, well, he's grateful for the kindness of strangers, and for shelters that don't look too hard at a kid by himself. This is a different sort of discomfort, though. Zuko feels a little ungrateful for indulging in it. He should be so happy to be cold in the summertime, right? He should be thankful. What he wouldn't have given to be cold this time last year. Uncle keeps telling him that he can eat what he wants, when he wants, as long as he says something when they're out of something. If that's the rule about food, food costs money, a lot of money, and Zuko does not waste either when he has it, then maybe he wouldn't be upset if Zuko went and found an extra blanket. It's not like he's asking him to buy a new one or anything. At home, blankets and extra sheets were always kept in the hall closet, back when Mama would take care of those things herself. It might be the same here. Zuko doesn't know, but it's worth checking. Eventually, Zuko drags himself out of bed and pads down the hall to the closest closet to Uncle's bedroom. That's where extra linens would make sense, right? The door opens with a creak, the way all doors do when they haven't been opened in a long while. There's nothing hanging inside, but there are boxes stacked floor to ceiling, all unmarked and all taped shut, all coated with a layer of dust. Zuko ignores them and looks up, only to catch sight of a familiar something. Before he can really consider whether or not it's something he should be doing, he reaches up, grabs a corner, and tugs. The whole thing comes down on his head in a slithery river of blue and green amidst Zuko's squeak of surprise. It's a huge crochet afghan in shades of dark blues and forest greens, and it's nearly too big for Zuko to hold without dragging on the floor. Mama made it for Lu Ten before Zuko was even born, and it lived on his bed for as long as Zuko could remember, all the way up to Lu Ten packing it up and moving to college. Zuko hadn't known then that he wouldn't see his cousin again. He didn't think that he'd ever see the blanket, either. Zuko's not stupid. He knows that realistically, there's no way that that blanket smells like anything other than closet. But when he brings it to his nose to take a deep inhale, he pretends that it can. His brain remembers the smell of Aunt Natsu's favorite laundry detergent that Uncle kept using after she was gone, just because she liked it. He remembers the body spray that Lu Ten used to practically bathe in middle school, that he was teased kindly, but mercilessly for. It's too whimsical to consider, too whimsical for words to think that he can smell happiness in a memory, but Zuko remembers. He suddenly and very desperately misses his cousin. His memories are clouded sepia sweet with nostalgia, but he knows that he didn't make it up. Zuko didn't make up his kindness or his patience in dealing with his clingy duckling of a little cousin. He didn't. Zuko buries his face in that blanket and tries to remember how to breathe. He thinks, just for a moment, that maybe he should put it back. But it's so high up, and Zuko doesn't have a stool or a ladder, and even if he had one, he doesn't want to put it back. A blanket certainly isn't a replacement for Lu Ten, or for Mama, who Zuko still hasn't learned how to think about without short-circuiting himself in pain. But it's all that he has. Of either of them. He'll just sit with it for a few minutes, and then he'll put it back. Just for a little bit, until he can make his hands let go. If Zuko ends up on the couch, wrapped up in shades of blue and green, he's not telling anyone about it. It's not like he's going to fall asleep or anything. He just needs to take a minute, and then he'll put it back. It's nearly 4:30 by the time Iroh's gathering his things to leave. There isn't that much to do. The closing staff know what to do, but Iroh takes his time anyway. Zuko's had a hard time of it, and having some time to himself, really to himself, to think and relax and decompress, might be good for him. Not too much alone time, but he's still a 12-year-old boy. Iroh doesn't want to smother him. He wants Zuko to be able to rely on him and trust him, and part of that is going to have to be Iroh being able to trust him first. It's not that he doesn't trust Zuko's motives. The child has none to speak of, other than doing whatever it is he has to do to not end up alone on the streets again. Of course he can't, trust Iroh when he says that that won't be happening. How could he? He doesn't know how. Zuko will learn as long as Iroh remains consistent with his words and his actions. He'll learn, but it's going to take time. Driving Zuko home was a quiet one, but this one seems even quieter. Zuko had been mostly silent, mostly asleep, but I was surprised at how quickly he's gotten used to having him around. The empty car feels quieter just from his absence. The front door is locked, just as Iroh had reminded him to do before he went inside. The house is quiet, at least from the front hall. Iroh hopes that Zuko has managed to nap. It may give him some trouble later when he's trying to go to bed that night. But Zuko's still a child, and children need sleep. Only a monster could see the bone-deep exhaustion written all over that boy and ignore it. It's not just tired in a physical sense. Zuko's mentally and emotionally tired, too. He needs rest, in bed, but also in life. A schedule, a routine that he can rely on so that he can remember how to do more than just survive. On a whim, Iroh checks the living room first, and drops his keys to the floor, his fingers suddenly too slack and too cold to hold on to them. The noise isn't that loud, but it's enough to startle Zuko awake, and he visibly jumps underneath the blanket he's wrapped himself up in like a burrito. It's a blanket that Iroh hasn't seen in years. He hasn't wanted to see it, couldn't bear to throw it out. Couldn't bear to throw out anything belonging to his only precious son that he won't ever see again, but can't bear to look at it either. Seeing it now feels like being punched in the heart with a spire of ice, run through with grief like it's only just happened, all over again. It's a hit that he can never learn how to block. "Why do you have that?" Iroh doesn't recognize the voice that comes out of him. Those are his words, but that can't possibly be his voice. It's too cold and hard, too angry, with too many sharp edges. It's too sharp, too angry, too mean to use on Zuko. Surely, Zuko didn't know. It's a mistake. He didn't mean to. Even as Iroh says those words in that ugly, ugly tone, he knows that it's not justified, that it's not warranted. Knowing that doesn't stop him from repeating them. "Why do you have that?" Zuko sits up, his already pale face draining of what little color it had to start with. His eyes are round and huge, and he struggles to make himself let go of the blanket pooling down around him on the couch, down to the floor. His hands are beginning to shake. Zuko can't seem to make words happen, tripling over every staggered, broken syllable he can get out in the wake of Iroh's grief, rage, pain. Very slowly, he slides his feet to the floor, making no sudden movements. The second they touch, he begins to back up until he hits the wall, then bolts for it at a full run, up the stairs and out of sight without another word. Iroh can't watch him go. He can't watch anything other than that blue and green blanket, innocuously sliding off the couch. Unchanged and frozen in time. Frozen in grief. There's no room in Iroh for concern or worry or regret. All there is the deep, engulfing trench of pain. There will be time, later, for Iroh to question what the hell he was thinking, prioritizing a memory over the living, breathing kid that he's just run off. That time isn't this time. This time is for stepping forward and lifting that blanket with reverence. It's just a blanket. Old, soft-washed yarn that's still as bright as the day that Ursa had finished it. Huge and heavy, and Iroh doesn't want to touch it. Delicately, carefully, as if it's going to fall apart under his hands, Iroh folds it up into the smallest square he can manage. He trudges up the stairs, numb and cold and frosty, and returns Luten's blanket to its resting place. From there, all he can do is go into his bedroom, shutting the door with a quiet click. Iroh sits on his bed with his head in his hands for a long, long time. He's used up his tears years ago, but they would be preferable to the hollow that's opened up in his heart. Like a sinkhole that takes everything else down with it, Iroh's already at the bottom. Who else is going to get dragged down too? Oh God. Oh God. Zuko. It's like waking up underwater. The world swims and then comes back to clarity in an instant. One single thought breaking the surface. Zuko. Iroh isn't thinking before he's moving. Up off of the bed and out the door. He has to find Zuko. He has to explain. He has to apologize. For once, Iroh doesn't knock on the door to the guest bedroom before opening it. It's empty. Zuko's not in the bedroom, and he's not under the bed. Iroh checks. He's not in the bathroom. Zuko's not in the kitchen or in the garage. He's not back in the living room. He's not on the porch. He's not in the backyard. Iroh's heart is living in his throat. Oh God, he's run him off, for real. He should have known better. All the pain in the world isn't an excuse to be nasty to a child. A child who's coming out of a lifetime of abuse, who can sniff out negativity with the sensitivity and tenacity of a bloodhound. Oh God. Iroh checks the guest bedroom. Zuko's bedroom, one more time. It's still empty, except that when he stops to try and breathe through the panic in his lungs, he can hear a very quiet noise coming from the closet, barely a rustle, like a sniffle. Dread sitting in the pit of his stomach like a rock, Iroh takes a step towards the closet and reaches out to tug the door open. Zuko's ruined everything. He should have just stayed cold. He should have just stayed in bed. He should have gone for the front door instead of the closet. He should have dialed someone else that night, if he'd known that he'd mess it all up this fast. He shouldn't have called anyone in the first place. He's tucked into the back of the closet, folded up so tightly that his knees can touch his chin. Zuko can't breathe. His heart's pounding in his head like a drum, and the little air he can manage to take in comes right back out in nearly silent, hiccuping sobs. How many times has he told himself to not push, to not make demands, to not find any excuse to figure out where Uncle Iroh's line in the sand gets drawn? Well, Zuko's found it, like he does with everyone, like a horrible, awful talent he doesn't want. Zuko fucked up, and now Uncle is so hurt and so mad. He missed his chance to make an actual escape, because Uncle Iroh came back into the house, and there's no way he's getting out now. He'll wait it out until Uncle gives up on looking, and then he'll be gone. It won't be hard getting out the window, even if the drop from the second floor will probably hurt. He'll figure it out. For now, though, Zuko remains as small as he can, wishing with everything he is to disappear, maybe to never have existed in the first place. He's so lost inside his own head, trying so hard not to let his brain just shove itself out of his body, that Zuko doesn't hear the footsteps of Uncle's return to his, the bedroom. The door opens with a quiet rattle, and Hand pushes aside the jackets. Silhouetted against the lights of the room, Uncle's tall and looming. Zuko can't see his face, not really, through his own blurry haze of tears. He doesn't want to see the anger written on his face, or the pain. Zuko shuts his eyes tight and drops his head into his knees, wrapping his arms tightly around himself. He doesn't know what he's waiting for. A blow, maybe. It never comes. Iroh opens the closet door and pushes a section of hangers to the side. His stomach plummets even deeper into his knees. Zuko's on the floor and pressed up against the wall. He stares up at him, glassy-eyed with tears, looking dazed in a way that's definitely concerning, before he's hiding his face in his knees and curling up tighter. He's silent through all of it, except for the sound of hard swallowing of air, but still, like he's waiting for something. Is he waiting for Iroh to hit him? To start screaming at him? Very, very slowly, Iroh takes a step inside and kneels down in front of his nephew. Touching him right now is probably a bad idea, so he keeps his hands to himself, despite the sudden need to hold him. Zuko twitches at his approach and peers up at him just for a second, before slamming his eyes shut again. Iroh has the suspicion that he's calculating his odds on running for it. Zuko, he breathes. Zuko, I'm not mad. Look at me, please. Despite it all, Zuko has yet to refuse a direct order. He's been unhappy, he's been reluctant, he's been surly, but he's always followed through with whatever Iroh has asked of him. Out of fear of what might happen if he doesn't? Zuko obeys him, even now. Cold, terrified eyes open. I need you to take a second, Iroh says. Take a breath. Zuko's response to that is not to take a second or to take a breath. Instead, he bursts into hysterical, noisy tears. I'm sorry, Zuko wails. I'm sorry! I didn't mean to make you mad. I couldn't sleep, and then I was cold, and then after I'd pulled it down, I couldn't reach to put it back up. I was so tired, and it was warm, and Mom made it. And then as quickly as he began crying in the first place, Zuko shifts from devastation to almost panicked rage. I don't care! I don't care about the stupid blanket anyway! I don't need it! Or you! Zuko cuts off abruptly and goes silent when Iroh can't take it anymore and reaches out to pull him into a hug. Zuko's a stiff little statue in his arms, and Iroh squeezes him, very gently, till he can feel the boy take a breath. I need you to listen to me, Zuko. If you only ever listen to me once, I need you to hear this. I should not have spoken to you like that, however hurt I was. I should have known better. I was surprised to see you with it, and reacted poorly. The understatement of the century. Zuko goggles at him. whether it's from the admittance of his pain, or the admittance of being wrong, Iroh isn't sure. It could be either, or it could be both. But you were hurt. Yes, Iroh says, very quietly. Yes, I was hurt. But so were you, and you did not deserve it. And I'm sorry for frightening you. My grief is not a reason or an excuse to speak to you like that. It's mine to deal with, and you are not responsible for it. Zuko flinches like he's been struck. Iroh doesn't understand. What is it? It's not just yours, Zuko whispers, finally. He won't look up. It's not just yours. It's mine, too. He'd finally stopped crying so hard, but the more he talks, the more his eyes well right back up again. I miss him, Uncle, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry I yelled at you. I miss my mom. Iroh's only option is to hold him tighter until he can swallow the lump in his throat, till his own breath doesn't burn. Can't even imagine how it feels to be Zuko, to have inexplicably survived the things that he's lived through. Through violence and homelessness and fear and everything in between. He can't understand, just like Zuko can't really understand how it felt to stand there and feel those old wounds get ripped open again. But Iroh can understand this. He can understand that Zuko doesn't feel safe because he sleeps with his shoes on and definitely has a food stash somewhere in this room. And has never refused direct instruction, even if he doesn't like it. Iroh can understand, because Zuko folded up and returned the hand-me-down pajama bottoms of his cousin that he was given that first night, but not the t-shirts. He can understand, because Zuko never asks for more than he's given. He doesn't ask for anything at all. I can find somewhere else to go if you want. Zuko offers softly, looking up through dark, wet lashes, like that's somehow going to make Iroh feel better. Like a 12-year-old boy effectively offering to go back out to living on the streets to make up for something that isn't his fault is going to help. Instead, makes him feel like he needs to crawl into a hole and die. No, he says. No, Zuko, no. You're not going anywhere else. Zuko jerks back, and Iroh thinks with horror at where he could have gone wrong. I can stay? Iroh does not cry. Iroh does a very good job of remaining steady and not crying, looking Zuko in the eyes, silently pleading for the boy to just believe him. Believe him, just for now. That he means what he says and will, come hell or high water, back up his words with action. I want this to be your home, Zuko. I know that it isn't right now, but it can be. I want it to be. I want this to be your home for as long as you want it. Forever, if you want it. Iroh wants that more than anything. He's wanted it since Zuko followed him back to his car, which feels like forever ago. If anything happens to this child, Iroh thinks that he won't survive it. Zuko's lower lip gives a single wobble. It's like a dam giving out. His hard-won composure crumples like wet paper, and he buries his face in his palms. The noise that comes out of him is horrible. It's not a sob or a whine, just a raw cry of pain that tears itself out of him like it hurts. Iroh can't leave him be, not when he so clearly needs to not be left alone, and reaches out to reel the boy back into his arms. Zuko's fight drains out of him, and he curls up very, very small in Iroh's arms. Cries and cries for what feels like an eternity, till he's out of tears, and all he's got left is a bone-deep, anxious shaking, nearly silent, hiccuping sobs. All Iroh knows how to do is hold him together until Zuko's little rabbit heart stops feeling like it's going to give out, too. Zuko's blinking slowly, dazed and drained. He looks exhausted and hollowed out. Doesn't even have the energy to wipe his face. In the end, Iroh does it for him with the edge of his sleeve. Iroh's sure that if he lets go, then Zuko's going to drop, boneless, to the floor. He doesn't know if he'll get up again, if he's allowed to drop. Iroh shakes him, very gently. "Zuko," he says softly, "would you like to come out of the closet now?" Zuko shakes his head wordlessly. He doesn't want to come out of the closet. He doesn't want to come out, possibly ever again, for the rest of his life. His everything hurts. His face, his head, his heart. The bruises still wrapping themselves dark and ugly around his body. Uncle's care is like its own kind of bruise all on its own. Bruise and a bomb all at once. Just because it hurts doesn't mean that Zuko doesn't still want it anyway. He feels like he's floating. Not like when he was so afraid of freezing to death that his brain would simply throw itself out of his body so that he just didn't have to deal with it. But different. Like he just doesn't have the capacity to do anything other than let himself be managed. He doesn't care if he stays in the closet forever. As long as he can keep feeling so warm and taken care of. Zuko's so tired. He's so tired of fighting, and he's so tired of being afraid all the time. He's so tired. Zuko hears Uncle make a soft noise of concern, but it's muffled, like he's underwater. He doesn't have the energy to care about it. Zuko doesn't even care when he's maneuvered gently back to lean against the wall of the closet, and then left alone. It's enough, he thinks, to have gotten what he did. It's enough to have been given comfort, even if it didn't last. Zuko's learned plenty about how to keep a memory like it's new. He doesn't know how long it is before suddenly he's not alone again. Could have been a minute, for a few minutes, or a few hours, but before Zuko knows it, Uncle's back in the closet, and wrapping blue and green around his shoulders. Zuko doesn't have it in him to fight it, but he feels like he should. That blanket is what started this in the first place. It's not his. Zuko knows that he can't have it, but doesn't have it in him to say no. Not when he wants so badly. "Your mother," Uncle says, bundling Zuko up like an infant and hoisting him into his arms with only a small sound of exertion, "would have been happy that this could bring you comfort. And so would my son. They loved you, Zuko, and so do I." Zuko's sure that he has nothing left, but his eyes burn and well up anyway. He doesn't let them fall. "You don't even know me," he mumbles. "Uncle should know better. You don't even know me." Zuko finds himself deposited very gently on the couch in the living room. He doesn't want to be treated kindly if he's only going to lose it later. But he can't make himself reject it. "I do know you," Uncle tells him firmly. "I know what's important." How can he? When Zuko doesn't even know what's important. "I know that you're kind, and that you're doing the best you can. I know that you're strong and independent, and try to do the right thing, even when you don't know what that is. Those things were true when you were smaller, and they're just as true now." "You don't know that?" Zuko's protests sound weak, even to him. He doesn't even know why he's fighting it. Watching him with that soft, sentimental face should make him feel happy. And it does, but first it just makes him feel scared. "You don't. You can't." Zuko is weak and scared all the time and isn't strong or kind at all. Uncle Iroh just watches him for a few moments. Eventually, he sighs a little and sits down next to Zuko on the couch, nudging aside the corner of Lu Ten's huge, warm afghan. "Lift your sleeve for me, please." Confused and a bit wary, Zuko does so, sliding the sleeve of his hoodie up to expose his upper arm. The ring of bruises is still deep and black and ugly, and hurts to touch. Zuko hates even looking at them, and ducks his head. "You got those for being strong," Uncle says quietly. "Someone wanted something from you, and you told them no. They tried to take it from you, and you fought." "I hit him with a rock and ran away." "You were smart. You did the best thing that you could do." "He didn't win. Zuko, none of them won." Fingers touch the underside of Zuko's chin and tip his face up. "I don't condone violence, but you are a child. If someone tries to hurt you, they deserve whatever they get." And a bit extra is what he implies, but doesn't say. Zuko looks Uncle in the eyes, and, for the first time in his life, can see ferocity on someone's face, and feel reassured instead of fearful. Zuko doesn't eat much at dinner. His stomach twists and roils inside his body and doesn't stop. It doesn't stop, not until Zuko asks, very quietly, for a piece of paper and something to write with. It's been a long time since he's written anything, and his penmanship is sloppy and out of practice. The sequence of numbers is clear enough to read when Zuko pushes the post-it silently across the table. Uncle takes it from him and doesn't ask what it is. He looks it over and commits it to memory before folding up the little yellow square and slipping it into his pocket. The little hurricane in Zuko's guts doesn't totally dissipate, but does settle a bit in the wake of what he's just done. It takes everything that Iroh has to not use that phone number the moment that it's in his hand. It takes everything, every drop of reason he can muster, to merely fold it up and put it away. The worry and trepidation on Zuko's face take priority in the end. Iroh can't imagine how much it took for Zuko to trust him enough to give it to him, and despite the rage that snarls for vengeance in his stomach, he knows that he can't do this to him right now. Zuko knows, of course, that Iroh was going to call his father. Of course he does. Iroh's told him as much, and explained the reasons why, and Zuko isn't stupid. He knows. But that doesn't mean that Iroh can, in good conscience, let him sit and stew and worry about what he's going to say or how it's going to go. It's not something that Iroh wants him to have to worry about, even though it's inevitable. Zuko doesn't sleep well that night. He can't even make himself pretend, either, not like he did last night every time Uncle opened the door to check on him. He's good at faking it. He's a light sleeper anyway, but it's easier to keep people from getting the drop on you in the night if the performance is convincing enough. But he doesn't have it in him tonight. Zuko knows that if he sleeps, he's going to dream. It's been a long, long time since he's even dreamed properly, and longer still that he's had anything other than nightmares. Even when he was little, Mama called them night terrors, but Zuko knew better. Night terrors are supposed to be made up. All of Zuko's nightmares are very, very real. The third time that Uncle Iroh comes in to check on him, and he sees Zuko flat on his back and staring blearily at the ceiling, he gives an audible sigh. Zuko doesn't look at him. "I'm so tired," he whispers. He doesn't have to look to know that Uncle's coming closer, and feels the edge of the bed dip down with pressure near his head. Forcing yourself to keep your eyes open won't help you very much, Uncle says gently, even as Zuko keeps staring stubbornly upwards. Would you like to talk about it? Zuko definitely does not want to talk about it. There's nothing to talk about. What's he going to say, anyway? That he's a dumb baby who's too scared of bad dreams to go to sleep? Please. I'm so tired, is all that manages to come out of his mouth. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix this. Help me. Don't leave me. Zuko says none of that, but he thinks that Uncle might hear it anyway. He flinches on instinct and shuts his eyes when a hand reaches out and strokes gently up his forehead into his hairline. You need rest, Zuko. I don't want to go to sleep. Uncle makes a quiet noise of consideration and doesn't push at him. Instead, he adjusts the edge of Luten's blanket and tucks it around him just a little closer. Zuko doesn't want to find it soothing, but he does anyway. Safe is too strong a word for how he feels right now, but wrapped up warm and cozy, and not alone, might be the closest thing he's been in a very long time. Zuko curls up on his side, and twists to press his forehead into the solid wall of Uncle's hip, allows the fingers in his hair to keep their calm, soothing movement. Uncle doesn't try to talk to him, for which Zuko is grateful. Zuko doesn't want to talk. Hell, he barely wants to be. But he'll take this, right here and right now, as a close replacement. Zuko's body is so comfortable, and his brain is suddenly so quiet. He doesn't fight the slow, creeping onset of sleep. He lets himself fall, and knows that he won't hit the ground alone.